At the risk of telling you something you already know all too well, the cost of just about everything is going up. The Labor Department released new inflation numbers today. Consumer prices are up 5.6% compared with this time last year. That's the biggest increase in 17 years.
If you've been to the meat counter at the supermarket lately, you've no doubt felt that increase. And if you think it's bad now, just wait a few months. As NPR's Yuki Noguchi reports, high feed and fuel prices mean that that steak you're eyeing will likely cost a lot more this fall.
Right now, next fall's steak is ambling towards the gate, eyeing its dinner at Robert and Gail Seddon's farm. These cows' feeding time is taking a big bite out of Old Town Farm's profit. So the Central Virginia farmers are paring their herd of 25 down to 10 this year.
I've got to sell 8 of them or 9 of them just to cover the cost of feed.
Robert Seddon says the price of feed has increased 50%. Hay has doubled from 2 years ago. Add the increase in gas and diesel, and the profit from a beef cow is half what it was.
Somebody's making money. It ain't me, though.
Commodity prices have backed off a bit in recent weeks, but global grain demand is still outstripping supply. And as a result, meat prices in general are headed for a bigger spike.
A lot of people are severely reducing the size of their herds, and that may cap the beef price. But once they run out of animals to cull and sell off, beef prices are going to shoot through the roof.
We're not going to really see until September, October, November, the supplies start to shrink a little bit.
Heather Vaughn is a spokeswoman for the National Cattlemen's Beef Association. She says some are simply shutting down.
A few years ago, we were seeing about 900,000 people across the country raising cattle, and today that number is closer to 760,000.
In fact, the USDA recently said beef cow inventory decreased 1% from last year to about 33 million cattle. Since earlier this year, the wholesale price of beef has increased about 18%. Just 10 miles north of Seddon's farm, farmer John Goodwin says he's adapting to increased costs. To save money, Goodwin plans to let his 300 cows graze longer on grass. But his herd also eats a mix of grains and plant that looks like dry cereal and smells like old beer.
And it's high in energy, and it's also high in protein.
But it also fluctuates in price and is expensive to ship. So 2 months ago, Goodwin's family built a huge concrete storage unit designed to store feed.
We're looking to be able to buy products when they're at the cheapest and then store them for however long we need to till we can fully utilize them. This is a way that we can help improve our cost of production so we lower it.
Goodwin says he has a vested interest in running an efficient operation, and not just for the welfare of his business. After all, he's a consumer himself. His favorite foods?
Steak and ice cream are probably the top ones. And that's not because I'm a beef producer.
Yuki Noguchi, NPR News.
Next, we'll try to understand how the economy is really changing by visiting one small piece of it. It's part of our Morning Edition series called The Money Map. The series has taken us to Nebraska farms and Ohio factories. And this morning we go to Wyoming, a state that is often up when the rest of the country is down. We're going to Elsa Partan. She's a reporter from Wyoming Public Radio in Laramie. And okay, Elsa, everybody else is down. Are you up?
Wyoming is way up. Wyoming's making a lot of money on coal and oil and natural gas, but natural gas has really been the biggest moneymaker in the last couple of years. It's boosted the whole state, but especially the towns that are really close to the energy fields, like a town called Kemmer, which is one of the places I've been reporting.
Well, what did you find there?
Kemmer is a town of 3,000 people. It's in southwest Wyoming. It used to be a big coal town. Now natural gas has really taken off. Downtown, there's a shoe and clothing store, and it's called Sawaya's. They sell Carhartt work clothes and work boots. It's a good example of a place that's really benefited from the boom. The owner's name is Mary Sawaya, and she told me business has improved by 50% since the boom started about 5 years ago.
About 10 years ago, it was in a slump. And then when Williamsfield built their second plant and Enterprise came in and all this oil and gas cycling came through, our business went way up.
Well, when she talks about the Williams Field or the Enterprise Field, are we talking about if you drive out of this town in any direction, you see oil derricks?
What you see is these columns, which are container units that help process the natural gas. And there are actually hundreds of them across along the roads, just all the way down the road from Kemmer south. And all that work in the energy industry means job growth in Wyoming has been the strongest in the nation in the last few months. But there's a cloud hanging over all this job growth, and that's a lack of workers. For example, hotels and restaurants are really struggling to find staff, and that's the problem at a Hampton Inn. It opened a couple of months ago in Rawlins, Wyoming. That's another energy town. The acting manager of the Hampton Inn is named Jordan Estes, and he told me he just can't compete with the high wages in the oil and gas industries.
Those that can pass a drug test are working out of the refinery, and those that, can't, go get a job in a hotel, I guess.
Must be a popular hotel for a certain kind of clientele.
I think he's really frustrated. As I walked into this hotel, one of the workers was saying, "I'm sorry, I won't be late again tomorrow." So there are even some fast food places that have to close after dinner time because they just don't have the workers to stay open. And owners just work really long hours to fill in for the folks who don't show up.
We're talking with reporter Elsa Partan. She's taking us on a tour of Wyoming, where the economy appears to be up. Although I have to ask, aren't energy and food prices also up for those people grabbing some of those jobs in Wyoming?
Inflation is really high here. Nationally, inflation is about, what, 5%? Here, more than 8% in these parts of Wyoming with oil and gas development. And that's what's happening in an energy town called Rock Springs, which is about 100 miles west of Rawlins, where we just were at the hotel. I met a shift manager at the Arby's there who's having trouble paying for food. Her name is Annetta Richards, and here's what she said about inflation.
I mean, groceries went from $250 up to $350 now, so I pay an extra $100 every 2 weeks for groceries for the same stuff I always buy. We're barely making it, so.
So Annetta Richards says her family is really struggling, even though her husband just got a raise working on an oil rig.
He makes good money now, but it still ain't enough, and we both work, and we only have two kids, and I don't see how people with the bigger families even do it.
Okay, so ordinary people seem to be having a tough time keeping up with inflation, but it seems like the government's doing pretty well, a $571 million budget surplus?
The state's doing really great. Folks like to complain here, just like anywhere else. But a couple of Wyoming economists told me that high energy prices really have been great for the government, but hard on people because of that inflation. But still, there's a ton to be happy about. The state's been able to eliminate a tax on food. There's still no income tax in Wyoming. And there's been a lot of money for the university. Get this. If a Wyoming kid can squeak through high school with a 2.5 GPA, she can get about half her tuition and fees paid for college here. Mm. The University of Wyoming is already one of the cheapest public colleges in the country.
That's reporter Elsa Partan in Laramie, Wyoming. And that's our latest spot we visited on the Money Map. It's a series on Morning Edition that gives us snapshots of how the economy looks in different parts of the country.
And you can hear other Money Map stories at NPR.org. We're talking this week with realtors across the country. The cities of Riverside and San Bernardino, in an area known as the Inland Empire, 60 miles east of Los Angeles, have some of the highest foreclosure rates in the U.S., one out of every 32 homes. Realtor Bill Santoro says that's partly because few buyers could really afford the houses that were built there.
In the last 6 years, we've had a huge growth in development of homes. The new homes in this last development seem like they forgot about the first-time buyers and the young buyers, and all the homes were huge.
Were people able to buy these homes partly because there were loans out there almost just for the asking?
A lot of the public just wanted a home, and since there's so much publicity on television of mansions and homes and how the rich and famous live, they wanted to emulate that style, and they didn't care how they got it.
So right at the moment, give us a thumbnail of the market there. How bad is it?
Comparing this to the last downturn I was in, all we had was an overabundance of property, but what we have is a double whammy now because we have this huge amount of buildup, and then they cut out all the loan programs that the public became spoiled and used to.
This all sounds like it's pretty bad for your business.
Well, actually, it just depends on which side of the fence you're on. I've switched over from dealing with what we call live body sales, which is an owner-occupied property, and I'm working with liquidating assets from seven different banks.
I gather that with the foreclosure part of your business, that you are the one that actually has to knock on doors telling people they have to move out, which I think can't be that easy.
Well, it is hard because, you know, you hear all the stories. In a normal market, why would anybody lose their home? It's very simple. It's death, divorce, and a loss of job. Normally, if they take a normal conventional type loan, then the payment stays consistent. Most of the payment problems now are because of the negative adjustable rate loans and also the interest-only loans. In fact, just the other day, I went to a gentleman's house. He knew his house had foreclosed, and he told me that his payment jumped up $1,000. Now, for the average income person, when you get a $1,000 increase within a month, you just can't make that kind of a difference up.
Tell us about buyers now. Are those who are buying, in a sense, shopping for bargains?
Well, the investors that shop for the bargains, there's a fair amount of them that are out there now because they've seen that the values are dropping 50%. But the people that are coming out now that we're looking at the sales that are coming in, many of them are owner-occupied because they were priced out of the market 5 years ago. Now the prices are pretty much almost back to 1988 pricing.
Do you see this current housing, really crisis in a way, having a lasting impact on this part of Southern California? Especially, I mean, it was such a boom area.
Well, real estate has always been it always cycles. It always goes up and it always goes down. And then what's going to happen is eventually I'm hoping that by the end of 2009, we'll have a real good leveling off. My little word for it is called the funky financing, will be pretty much extinguished. Most of the public now that will have bought in these coming years are going to be mostly fixed-rate FHA government-type loans that aren't adjustables. The people have invested a little bit of money on them. And then we'll go back to a more stable market where the only real reason why you should be losing your home is death, divorce, and loss of job.
Bill Santoro is a real estate broker with National Realty Group in Moreno Valley here in Southern California. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Tomorrow, a bright spot in real estate, Dallas.